Whitney Laney from Z88.3, hanging out with Bowen Hammett. This is Matt Hammett from Sanctus Reels' son. He's 5 years old, and this is his first time here at Magic Kingdom. Are you having a fun time?
Yeah.
You are? What's been your favorite thing so far?
The concert.
And do you have anybody you want to see here, like Mickey or Minnie?
I want to see Mickey Mouse.
Oh, that's so fun. I bet Mickey Mouse wants to see you, too. Is there any ride you want to go on?
The Dumbo.
Awesome. Well, have a good night, Bowen.
Okay. Have fun and lot of joy.
Hey, we're Ellis and Tyler from the Z88.3 Morning Show in Orlando.
And you're listening to the Lead Me Lifecast.
Over the top.
Over the top?
Yeah, too much.
And you are listening to the Lead Me Lifecast.
A little bit more.
And you are listening to the Lead Me Lifecast.
Nailed it.
I want to thank my good friends Ellis and Tyler for opening up the show today. And yes, Ellis, you did nail it. So thank you. And a big thanks to all of you for listening. Today, we're picking up where we left off last week. This is Lead Me Lifecast, episode number 12, Bowen's Heart, part 2. Well, that adorable audio clip that you heard at the very top of the show was actually Bowen at Disney World at the Magic Kingdom being interviewed by some dear friends of ours, Z88 in Orlando, one of the best stations in the country. And Carol and Tyler and Ellis and Jim and AJ and Tate and all these people who are dear friends of ours down there, plus so many who, I didn't even mention. Just, wow, thank you so much for your hospitality to us. It was truly a special time for us, a special time to watch Bowen just full of awe and wonder, getting to meet Mickey Mouse and see the Magic Kingdom. And, what a magical moment for all kids. I remember the first time I saw the Magic Kingdom, first time I met Mickey Mouse when I was a kid. So pretty great stuff to experience.
Yeah, when you saw the like characters, you could tell he was like really analyzing whether they were real big animals or they're like, people in there.
Is this cool or creepy?
Yeah,
and
totally.
Once you get past that, it's like, this is cool. So
yeah, it was fun. I think his favorite thing though, if I could guess, was he said he's been telling people the King and Country concert under the palace, and second, the pool. So we stayed at the Boardwalk, so those of you who have also stayed at the Boardwalk know the clown pool very well. That was one of his second favorite things to do. So yeah. He loved it a lot.
Yeah, it was good. Good trip.
Yep. We flew in. Did we already explain what we did there? CMB?
You know what? We kind of did, but not in detail. So basically the Christian music broadcasters, from all over the country, even some international radio folks, come into Orlando every year for an event called Momentum. And they obviously have tons of sponsors, speakers, bands play. And I've always been there as an artist every single year.
For Night of Joy,
yeah.
Not for the conference.
No, and for CMB, for both.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so always been to the convention as an artist to perform, to do interviews and such. And then also Night of Joy and Rock the Universe, which are two Christian music events that go on at Disney World and Universal Studios. They both happen that very same week. So there's all kinds of stuff going on in that Orlando area all in that time period.
Yeah.
So anyways, this time I wasn't there as an artist performing at Night of Joy or CMB. I was there as, Sarah and I and Bowen were there as sponsors. So Whole Hearts Foundation actually sponsored a snack break. We got to play a series of videos.
Along with JRA too.
Yeah, along with Jeff Roberts, who has been just a great partner of ours and as a booking agency over the past few years. Partnered with us to sponsor. So we got to sponsor the event, got to have Bowen with us and say thank you to all the radio stations from all over the country and world that prayed for Bowen, in our time of need. So it was a really neat time for us to do that.
Yeah, we gave them, I think the snack, the snack was Mickey Mouse Rice Krispie Treats dipped in chocolate and sprinkles. And then we gave everyone a little thank you card brochure thing. And we played a video for them. It was pretty cool. So it was wonderful to give back after all that people have given us. So
yeah. And for me, it was cool also because I got to run my first 5K
Oh yeah.
My first organized 5K ever. And so that was really special to run the Momentum 5K and with a bunch of my friends, artists and radio friends. And it was just an incredible weekend. We had a blast.
One of my highlights was our friends from Z88 invited us to come up and be their guests in the train station. They close it off and they catered a meal and they invited us up and we sat up on the balcony of the train station and watched the concerts. You can't hear them because you're too far away, but watched the concerts from afar. It was just like magical. It was so cool. And we've just had a great fun-filled couple weeks of just celebrating his life. And but actually the last couple days he's come down with something where he's had a fever for gosh, it's been almost 4 days now. So we've kind of, you know, we had those, you know, that week of celebration and now it's kind of like back to reality.
Back to reality for sure. And we always say this, but I'll say it again. Please always keep Bowen and our family in your prayers, especially as we move into a brand new season once again. So with that, we want to play you a clip from last week's episode. And then we're going to continue on with part two of Bowen's Heart right here on the Lead Me Life cast.
We crawled into bed. I remember I woke up to my alarm at 1. I called. Everything was stable. Fell back asleep. My alarm went off at 2. I called. Everything was stable. And at 2:13 a.m., we got a phone call in the room.
So yeah, so 2:13 a.m. that morning, we got a phone call. You answered the phone.
Yep.
And
I heard the words, "Come quick, we've started compressions."
And we didn't even know what compressions were.
Not really, no. I mean, yeah, no. And so for a second, I kind of stood there like, compressions, come quick. And then I realized he was dying.
Yeah.
And so
he started yelling at me, just, "Matt, get up, get out of bed."
I just remember screaming. Yeah. And so I just remember you just hopped out of bed super fast and threw on your sweatshirt. And we were only just across the street at the Ronald McDonald House, but still it was too far to run. And so we got in the car. I remember you just like nailed it, like made a few turns, pulled in, parked a car right next to the elevator, went straight up to the 5th floor, walked out the elevator around the corner. And I can still see it. I literally can see it clear as day.
Yeah, I'll never forget that hallway. Yeah.
Walking, turning the corner to this huge group of people around Bowen's bed. And they're literally calling out things right and left. I remember like you and I rushed up and we were at the bottom of the bed towards his left foot. And I remember holding on to his left foot. And I looked at him and he was so gray, seemingly completely lifeless. I mean, I didn't really realize somebody could come back from looking so terrible. And I remember the force that they had to use to keep his heart going was seemingly so violent. I mean, his chest was still open from the surgery because when they're so little, they don't pull their chest closed because they're swollen. So they had ripped the tegaderm off the top and Sarah, the nurse that pumped his heart the entire time, Sarah, we still see her. She's amazing. They all were amazing, but that day that was her pumping and how well she did it and God's miracle and all that. So, she was pumping and I remember her fingers were on his actual half of a little heart in his chest. And I remember they kept on saying to her, "Do you want to switch out?" Or however they said it, they like change out or something. And she was like, "No." And she just kept on going.
Yeah, it was awful. It was awful. You know, I remember too, just one of the things that hit me when we walked in was that the music was so loud.
Oh yeah.
And I remember it was Audrey Assad. Mm-hmm. It was a song, "Restless. I'm restless till I rest in you." And I remember that just sweeping over us. And it was just so surreal. It was literally like being in a movie because the music
sure
was so loud and there are all these people. And it was like, you know, it feels like slow motion. And I remember thinking like, this is the way that God chose to take our son.
I remember being so like stoic. Like I remember thinking, why am I not crying? And I think it was because I had cried all my tears. Like I was preparing for that moment. We could lose our son. We could lose our son. This is a real reality. And here it was, like I cried all these tears and he's dying now. And so I almost went into like, I started to plan his funeral. Like as I was standing there, as they were calling out numbers, like, how are we going to tell the girls? What are we going to say? How are we going to say it to them so that it doesn't, so that they don't hate God? You know, like, how are we going to present this to them? And what's the funeral going to look like? And I literally started planning, and you were behind me. Yeah. And you hadn't cried a whole lot.
No,
throughout the process.
I guess maybe the way that I dealt with it was to kind of stuff it, you know, and almost denial that that was a possibility, because I just wanted so bad as his dad to have the faith that God would carry us through it. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of his health, that he would survive. And so, I mean, I knew God would carry us through regardless of what happened, but I think I really wanted to believe and have faith that he would live, even though I really should have been prepared, you know, for that. And I do remember just grabbing his little stuffed alligator and holding yeah. that. And I was hugging you and I just crying in your back. So I think it was like, man, for us, it was probably over 40 minutes before they pulled us into that other room. And in that moment, I just felt like I knew. And I think you did too. I just felt like I knew, like, this was it. And
well, the whole time I felt like we were just waiting for them to call the timeout. I just kept on saying to myself, like, this is about to happen. But they came up to us and said, okay, we're going to try one last thing. We think we've got a shot. And so you and I think we're like, what? Like, even though they were going to try, I think we had really told ourselves that that was probably the end. So,
yeah, I remember being in that room and just, there's a rocking chair. And I remember sitting in that rocking chair and just holding the alligator close to my chest. And, you know, I always tell people, you know, I wrote that album, Every Falling Tear, between April and September. And one of the things that I wanted that album to do was to remind us of God's faithfulness, mm-hmm. regardless of what happened, that we would remember that God is faithful, even if we lost him. And that song specifically on Every Falling Tear called You Are My Treasure was just in my head. Because mm-hmm. there's that line that says, when sickness and death is at my door trying to steal from me, it cannot take what I've already laid down at Jesus' feet. Mm-hmm. And just remember thinking, you know what? I've given this all to God. I know where my hope is. I know where my treasure is, regardless of what happens in this life. And I just kept saying, Jesus, you're my treasure. You're my treasure. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you remember it better than I do, but I just said a prayer that God would save Bowen's life.
I mean, all I remember in the moment that you prayed, I just remember feeling like it was different than you've ever prayed. Like it just, yeah. It was different.
You know, actually, if you go to bowensheart.com and you look at, I guess, the September blog from 2010, you can read all that happened about the night of September 14th. Well, the morning, really.
And you should read that, actually.
Yeah. Just before 6 a.m. that morning, I actually just posted an email my dad wrote to some friends because we were just too tired to talk about it. And then on September 15th, we wrote this. A couple of hours ago, we received a copy of Bowen's blood tests and vitals. Sarah and the doctor joked that we should frame it because it doesn't get much better than this. His body is doing very well off of life support. Thank you for all of your prayers. We ask that you continue to pray for Bowen because we've been told and have now experienced firsthand that his condition will make for a bumpy road with unexpected turns. Upon receiving some good news, I feel that it's easier to share the details of what happened yesterday morning when Bowen crashed. I've put together excerpts from my journal and have taken down Sarah's perspective in hopes of giving you a glimpse of what we actually went through. I've also posted some photos and another song demo that holds new meaning to me. On the morning of September 14th at 2:13 a.m., Sarah received a phone call from the hospital. Bowen's nurse exclaimed, "We're starting compressions. Please come quickly." Sarah yelled for me to get out of bed. I jumped up as fast as I could, and we raced to the hospital. We took the elevator to the fifth floor, ran down the hallway to the PCTU. And after passing through the double doors to his unit, we turned the corner to see Bowen's seemingly lifeless body being resuscitated. The nurse had her fingers between the walls of his chest, pumping his little heart, switching her hands every few minutes from fatigue. I was shocked that saving someone's life could look so violent. They rushed us to his side to be near him in what could have been his final moments. All Sarah could do was stare down at the bed sheets, hold Bowen's toes, and pull his blanket close to her face. I cradled her and wept into the back of her sweatshirt as I held Bowen's hand and prayed. We were frozen in that moment while people all around us were shouting numbers, calling out orders, and working together to save Bowen's life. It was like a scene from a movie. My iPod was still on repeat near his bed from earlier and was playing loudly through a pair of speakers. As the words, "I am restless till I rest in you," washed over us, we knew that God was either ushering Bowen out or ushering in a miracle. When the song Restless began to fade, I reached to put on the song All of Me that I posted the lyrics to on August 22nd. After almost 40 minutes had passed, Sarah and I were waiting for them to call it a time of death. Instead, they pulled us into another room so they could start the process of putting him on life support. We honestly thought it was a last-ditch effort to save his life and that he was already gone. For the next half hour, we struggled to accept and began to grieve what we thought was the loss of our precious baby boy. At one point, I remember praying, "Father, if this is even a fraction of the pain that you felt when you gave us your only son, I thank you for letting Jesus die on the cross. Put into motion the redemptive and healing power of your son's death to spare the life of ours." Shortly after we prayed, a nurse entered the room and told us what we never expected to hear. She said that he was alive and that he had been successfully placed on life support, or ECMO. Sarah remained in the other room while I returned to where Bowen was. And from a distance, I watched as the surgeon reached into my son's chest to look for what may have gone wrong. After he was finished, he covered Bowen's chest, looked up at me with smiling eyes and said, "Hey, Dad, you still have a kid in there."
No, I forgot that that doctor said that to you.
Yeah, I did too.
Till right now. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Called him D-Bar, Dr. Dan.
Yeah.
Great guy. Hey, thanks for listening to the Lead Me Lifecast. There's more to come, but first I want to tell you, if you haven't checked out MattHammettMusic.com yet, go there, subscribe to my newsletter, and you're going to want to get your tickets for the Lead Me Live events. We're almost 10% sold already for our first two, and they're almost 5 months out, so go get them now. Hey, also I want to thank some of the people who are helping us make this show possible through Patreon. We have Jim and Allie Herrick, Bob and Ann Ohlers, Don Miller, Dennis and Susie Michaud, Craig and Sarah Voltz, and Valerie and Brian DePoy. We want to thank them for their patron support of the Lead Me Lifecast. If you're interested in becoming a patron and linking arms with Sarah and I just to share in the financial investment that we make to make this show possible, then go to MattHammettMusic.com, hit the patron button, and join us. And if for some reason you can't join us as a patron, do us a favor, just use good old-fashioned word of mouth. It's powerful. Tell your friends that you like what's happening on the Lead Me Lifecast.
So from that point on, it was like 36 hours. And with life support, with that kind of life support, you have about, you maybe have 2 to 3 weeks. There's a ton of risks. Bleeding out, strokes, brain damage, clotting. There's just a lot of risks, even though there's also some, some optimistic, obviously there's some good things to it. There's some great things to it. But so we watched him carefully. He was getting his pulsivity back. And in 36 hours, Dr. Crowley started to trial him off. And he successfully trialed off the first time we tried, which was, that's just great. So he got off 36 hours later, and that was really, then he just, the healing process started. I remember even he was intubated for a long time after that. I think it was a good 2 weeks. We were in the ICU for, I think, 3 solid weeks. We were in the hospital in all for 12 weeks. So that's 3 months. But what ended up happening for us, so as, you know, Bowen came off ECMO, he started to get stronger slowly, but it's very much a roller coaster. I mean, one day things are looking good or 1 hour things are looking good. And then all of a sudden you've got a, you know, really high white count. Then they're worried about infection. Then his heart rate's up or he's having, you know, so they're always like tweaking things and things you feel optimistic. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh no, it's not good. So it was just up and down, back and forth for weeks. And then finally we got to leave the ICU and to, it was called moderate care. It wasn't the floor, which was, you know, the third step before you go home. It was moderate care. So it was between critical and the floor. And, so we were there and when another problem arose for Bowen, and this is a crazy one. So all of a sudden Bowen started to get super sweaty. Okay. Well, this is like a heart kid thing, I guess, but he started getting pale and really, really, really hungry, even though he was NG fed. We were also feeding him with a bottle and he would get super hungry. And he just was acting strange. And then all of a sudden they found a low blood sugar on one of his morning labs. And so they were like, we're going to start checking his blood sugars more often. Well, come to find out his blood sugar was dropping really dangerously low, like 30s, 20s, teens. And he was severely hypoglycemic. And I just remember being perplexed. Even the team, everybody was perplexed. Like, what is going on? And so, you know, this was week 3.5, I think. Oh my golly, 3.5. Yeah. 4 maybe. I don't know. So right around between 3 and 4 weeks. And so this little sugar problem turned into a massive problem. He was dropping, he was stroking, he was having seizures. It was like taking his life. And this was for, I would say, a good 6 weeks, maybe. Yeah, I would say about 6 weeks this went on. And that's why we were there. He was healing well with his heart. Everything was looking good from the heart standpoint, but they could not figure out this sugar problem. So, like, you know, endocrinology got involved. They did testing on him. They diagnosed him with something called hyperinsulinism. And Philadelphia, CHOP, is the leader in heart and in endocrine. So there was a lot of conversation with them. And they were like, you know, we don't see this very often. This is super rare. And to be in sync with this single ventricle is like 3 million chance. I mean, it was like super duper rare, but I just remember feeling so helpless because it just didn't seem like anybody really could understand what was happening. And they didn't, they would admittedly say like, we don't really understand what's happening. We don't know. We're going to have to life flight you out to CHOP. That's how bad it got. And early on, I started researching the medicines that Bowen was on. And he was on an ACE inhibitor called captopril. So I researched everything, but the captopril, the ACE inhibitor, I found a report that the FDA said 3% of adults complain of severe hypoglycemic episodes when on this captopril or any ACE inhibitor, really, but it was captopril. And so I would present this over and over to the doctors, and they had never, you know, on their, you know,
really just in their institution, they hadn't seen this particular thing happen before.
Yeah. And so I would continue to present it to the pharmacist and the doctors and just as a solution, let's change his medicine to a different class of blood pressure medicine. No, 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 no. We can't do that. We can't do that. Cause we didn't want to rock the boat with his heart, but he was honestly dying from sugars at this point. Like something had to give because we were like stuck. We couldn't, he was on continuous feeds, diazoxide. He was on all this medicine for his blood sugar and his heart. It was like we were chasing this thing. And so I remember one night, you know, I was vigilant at his bedside there from morning rounds till night rounds till midnight. I mean, it was just, I was there all the time. So I was watching everything happening. And so from my vantage point, he was dropping after his medicines. And so one night I remember I left and I said to this, I said to my nurse, I said, okay, so just go over with me so I can sleep good tonight. What are you going to do after his 4 o'clock meds? Check his sugar. Yep. Okay. If he's low, what are you going to do? You know, cause they were a heart doctor or I'm sorry, a heart unit. Like I had said in the past, they deal with hearts. They don't deal with sugars, you know? And so they had to get the orders from endocrine. And there was a few times it just took too long for my comfort. So I would always kind of just go over with that nurse, you know, let's just talk, help me out. Put me at ease that you've got it. You know what you're going to do. So anyways, that particular night, the lab was drawn and sent out, but didn't come back for an hour. And when it came back, it was at 17. And so, I mean, needless to say, when I got back in the morning, I was furious. He had dropped to 17. Now, they gave him some food, but they didn't give him his emergency medicine that he needed to bring him back up out of that low sugar. And so within 3 days, he started having seizures. And the MRI showed a significant event happening in the last 5 days. And so, you know, that's really what happened. His sugars went too low. He actually had a stroke from those low sugars. And so at this point, I'm just mad. So finally, the doctors listened to me and they appeased me. I said, "Okay, we're out of no one's got any better options right now. You're talking about lifelining us to CHOP. My son just had a stroke. Something's got to give. All I can find is that this medicine can do this to some people. Can't we just try?" And I said, "If you just check his sugars, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, and 90 minutes out from his." From his medicine, and there is no trend, then I will leave you alone. And you can life flight us to CHOP and we'll go to CHOP. If there is, will you please switch his class of medicine? And sure enough, within I think 12 hours, they noticed a trend, they switched him, and we have never seen a problem with it again. And I mean, it was going to melt him away. You know, it was eating away at his brain.
And yeah, I think a big takeaway from that too for other people is that, you know, when you're in a hospital, like every doctor, every nurse has given their life to this because they care about the patients. They want to make a difference. But, you know, they're seeing so many different cases. They're taking in so much information. They're trying to help so many people that there are going to be holes that are going to have to be filled by the people who love the patient and who are in the patient's family and who have the time and emotional energy to really look after that person fully. And right. So, you know, I think especially with a child, you know, and especially you being a mother, you know, you had that gut that told you that something is going on with my child. I'm going to figure out what it is. And once you got your head and your gut around it and you knew, you had to push. And it turned out you were right, even though you were told you were wrong. Not because anybody was, you know, trying to hurt our child. It was just that they hadn't seen that before.
Yeah.
But your gut told you that that's what it was. You know, if your gut is telling you something, don't discredit that.
Yeah. And for me, it's the Holy Spirit, which is your mommy gut. To me, it's similar, you know.
Absolutely.
And I just feel like the Holy Spirit just nudged me, and that was it. And it's interesting how now, okay, 5 years later, how that hunch, the Holy Spirit, my mommy gut, to this day, like God has sort of shown me his voice through that. Like, you know, 6 weeks of doctors saying, no way, no possibility, not a chance. And the Holy Spirit saying, yes, yes, yes. And then come to find out the Holy Spirit, you know, that was right, you know? And so I'm learning with, you know, our medically fragile child, how to listen to that voice, you know?
Yeah,
it's been an interesting journey.
Not just in medicine, but in all areas of your life, you learn to be sensitive to that and understand and know when Lord's speaking something to
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. So, okay.
And
so,
I've learned to trust that voice.
Yeah. So we had this sugar thing under our belts. We got out to the floor, which was like an upgrade. And we were learning, you know, we had to go to CPR classes and NG tube classes. They had to teach us how to, you know, place the NG tube.
Trying to get a baby to let you basically put a tube up his nose, down his throat.
And then check it to make sure it didn't go into his lungs, and then you would flood him and he would drown. Yep. So you had to check and make sure that it was in his tummy. Air in it,
like basically, Oh, it was the worst.
Yeah, that was daunting. So we had to learn all that. And so we're at the last few weeks we're at the hospital, and I remember everything is looking fantastic. And we did have a couple more hiccups. I'm just remembering this now. At one point, his white count and a bunch of stuff happened after all the sugar stuff's done, and they started talking about endocarditis, which is like an infection around his heart. And I remember they had to draw labs, and it was just like, are you kidding me? Here we are. We're finally almost out. He's looking pretty good, and he might have an infection in his heart, which basically makes we have to be on antibiotics for like, oh, we did have to do that. I think it was like 2 weeks or something.
Open up his chest again.
Yeah, and then his wires from his sternum. Oh, that's right.
His wires from his sternum got infected.
He couldn't heal.
Infection.
His wound would not heal. And so they had to put these wound vacs on him. And then they had to like open him back up and take samples. So all that to say, they were amazing. They helped save Bone's life. You know,
yeah, we're so grateful. Yeah. You know, for all these people that God put in our lives who walked through all the bumps with us trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Finally, we ended up going home. And I remember we got a call from ABC World News like 2 days before we were going to go home.
It was almost Thanksgiving. And we were like, so we'd been in the hospital for weeks and weeks and weeks. And we were just so ready to go home. And I remember just the turmoil we felt inside because we were like, okay, Lord, we told you that however you wanted to use Bowen's life and his story, that we would open that up to you. But we are so tired and we do not feel like having a national news crew follow us home. And it was a interesting thing, but we just felt like we were supposed to do it.
Yeah, it was like, that is exactly it. Like everything in me was like, no.
Yeah.
But then I felt like, no, it was like... Of course, to spread awareness and God's love and, you know, yes, we'll do it. Absolutely. But yeah. it was hard because I remember we had cameras in our face as nurses are trying to brief me on all this really important stuff. And I'm like, about to have an anxiety attack.
Yep.
And he was vomiting and his sugar. We were still watching his sugars because we didn't know if he was totally out of the woods from that yet. He was, but we didn't know. And so... Yeah. So anyways, we had the news fall home. They were so, it was an honor that they came to do that.
It really was. And Jim, who came and did the story, was
so cool.
Was such a neat guy. And we're thankful for him too.
So
if you want to watch that, I was telling them, if they want to watch that, you can Google Baby Bowen, heart defect.
ABC News or
ABC
something.
News, yeah.
ABC World News. So we get home to our beautiful girls and our family in the front with signs and... we were relieved, but we got home and you literally feel like you've been handed like an atomic bomb. Like, here you go. Take this super medically fragile child home to the rest of your family. And
that had to be connected to monitors every second of his, you know, existence till now. And then all of a sudden,
yeah,
unplug, here he is.
Well, and we watched a lot of children die in the hospital.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so you're just, so yeah, here you go. Here's this kid and good luck. I mean, what else are they supposed to do? Obviously, that's what you do. But I mean, I remember the fear and he was on medicine round the clock. I can't even remember, but it was all the time and tons of it. And so he also was on those continuous feeds because they were still worried about his sugar. So he would vomit through the night. Because I was that mama hen, I didn't really let you much stay up with him and do anything, even though you offered. I was like, no, I got it. Because I was afraid you were going to forget something. And
it's all right.
So I was the one up through the night and he would vomit and we were afraid he was going to aspirate. So I would sleep right next to him and he would wake up every 30 minutes.
I mean, twice an hour he would throw up. And it was
and
just,
that noise he would make when he was about to throw up was so scary.
It was so scary. Yeah.
And then he would like cry and his NG tube would come out and we had to get it right back in because he couldn't go without food. And oh my gosh, those days, it went on. I remember too, we had we got assessed for like getting a night nurse. and we didn't qualify. And I remember thinking like, what do you mean he's not sick enough? Oh, I was just so heartbroken.
I remember leaving too, you know, like I had to leave with a kid. Right. Literally, yes. You have two other girls you're trying to take care of. And you got this baby who's like literally is throwing up like 1 to 2 times an hour. So 20 to 30 times a day. And I just remember it was such a difficult time.
Well, and we had help from family and friends, but it's still all on your shoulders.
Well, on the blog too, people can see like the pictures of all the syringes and, you know, and, gosh, all the medicines. And it was a difficult
time. I remember the night
time.
That we pulled his NG tube for the last time. He had pulled it out and you and I were, it was midnight and we knew we had to get it back in because he couldn't go to bed without it. And we were both literally in tears because neither wanted, like we were trying to get it in the right place and we couldn't find it. And then I think I just said, I'll get up every hour and feed him. I'll check his sugar every hour. It's okay. So we just left it out and we were like, we're done with this. And so we just never went back to it. We pulled it out and just told the doctors we're done with it. Like we can't do it. And he ended up just growing. So we were fine.
Yeah.
But I think after the NG tube, but all this happens. Okay. So now we're at month 4. We know that we have to go in 2 more months to have his second surgery. So literally we're like, we're not out of the woods. We're like looking at the surgery in 2 months. Like that's 8 weeks. It was such a cloud of time. And so somehow, how the Hammetts managed to do something like this, you basically drove on New Year's Day, you drove by our current home. So, and you said, I really like this house. And we knew, needed a little bit of,
you had seen it.
I had seen it.
You had said, I drove by this house a few times. The price just went down and you had asked me to look at it.
That's right. And so it was the worst timing possible, but the house made sense for us. And so within 2 weeks we moved, we bought it and moved in 2 weeks. Oh no, 3 weeks time. It was 3 weeks time by the time we saw it and we were moved all the way in 3 weeks. Yeah. And then like 6 weeks later.
I think I started a foundation
later,
in there somewhere too.
Oh yep. You started a foundation.
Hearts.
And 6 weeks later after we bought the house, Bowen went in for his second stage repair, which is the hemifontan for us. It's a Glenn for a lot of other people, but, oh my gosh. So yeah. So he just, he ended up doing better and better as he got closer to that, to the hemifontan. And so going into that second surgery, I mean, gosh, I was prepared to stay for another 3 months, you know, and it was so overwhelming. Oh, and you know what? You guys, the boys were out for the Grammys. You had just been nominated for a Grammy and the rest of the band got to go out there and we were stuck in the hospital, or we were leaving the next day for the hospital, you know, just to take our son for heart surgery, you know, so it was Grammys versus heart surgery.
Yeah, it's funny though, because it's like, I don't even regret for a second that I didn't go.
No.
You know, it's like, but what a contrast of worlds.
Yeah, it was like,
Remember the first time we got nominated, the tour we were on wouldn't let us go. And this time, Bone was in the hospital. And so I'm going to have to work towards another nomination so I can actually take my beautiful bride next time and we can go to the Grammys together. How about that?
Yep. So he went in for that second stage repair and he did amazing. He was out in 5 days.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so wonderful. I mean, I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, I couldn't believe how well he did. It was such a miracle. And from that point on, he's honestly flourished. He had one other surgery when he was 1.5 years. His they sewed him up with wires and he has this little hump on he did have this little hump on his chest for how it healed. And when he would like crawl around and scoot, he like busted his wires. And so they had to go in, like they had to sedate him and fix that.
Yeah.
And he got ear tubes at that same surgery and he got a cath, didn't he? He got it all done at one time. And since then, since 1.5 years, Bowen hasn't had any other surgery. He's Typically they like to do what's called the fontan, which is the final stage to repair, between 18 months and 3 years old, and sometimes up to five. That check in my heart that I felt before, I have it again. And I've done some research, and there is some data that shows that waiting or delaying is okay for that. So that's sort of the road we're taking right now, is we're delaying the fontan for a little while. So yeah, so that's where our current status is. Bowen needs this third stage repair. We just went in for a checkup. His heart looks, I've heard the words, as good as a single ventricle can look. It looks improved to an extent. And so right now we're just holding steady right there. So that's his current status, is he is doing well, but he's going to be battling this his whole life. And as far as life expectancy or what they're thinking, things are changing, because I have a friend, Meg, her mom, when she's 23 years old, when her mom had her, they said she had a 3% chance at life, and that life would be not very good quality. And she's doing great. She recently had a stroke, but she's kind of pulling through that and doing well. And so we've got those types of examples. And then we've got, you know, there was a boy, Russell, when we were at Mott, and oh, sweet Russell, he got one of the side effects called PLE.
Yeah, PLE is just, it's protein losing neuropathy, which means your body can't absorb protein.
I think he was maybe 17 or 18, and maybe even a little older, and he passed away. So there's really just no way to tell what the future holds. It could be good or it could be not good. So we just pray and live each day as it comes, and slowly you begin to find a new normal, and you learn how to balance that hope and reality. Some days are harder than others. Bowen was just sick this last 3 days. And last night, actually, he started coughing at 9 o'clock. And the first thing that runs through my mind is this it? Is this the end? Like, and you know, he's turning almost gray in his cheeks, and he can't catch his breath, and you know, he's got a fever, and you think, has it gone to his heart? Does he have meningitis, or is he septic? Is what's going on? Or is his heart failing, and it's just all of a sudden onset heart failure, and he's totally failing right now? You deal with those sorts of things. He's great today, so he's fine. But I would say that, like, in the beginning, I used to wake up in the morning and I felt like I was in a nightmare. And that's, you know, that feeling goes away, and there are beautiful blue skies again. And to any of those moms that have just found out about their babies being sick, that for us, life is beautiful again. Because I know you feel like life will never be beautiful again, but it does. It gets beautiful.
Life is beautiful. And thank you for listening to the Lead Me Lifecast. You know, I want to thank a few people here. I want to thank all the people at Mott Children's Hospital. We want to thank our families, my parents, the Hammetts, and the Schoolers, Sarah's parents, our brothers and sisters, Aaron and Tara, Chris, Hannah. I want to thank the nurses who we love so much, Nicole, Jen, Sarah, who pumped Bowen's little heart, Courtney Allen. We're so grateful for you. Thanks to Lori and Angie, our band family, the Grawmans, the Romans, Calvary Church, Cedar Creek Church. The list goes on and on and on. If you helped us in any way, you know who you are during that time. And that blessing has allowed us to go on and bless so many others through Whole Hearts Foundation. So thank you, and join us next week for another episode of the Lead Me Lifecast.